So the period of Chester Belloc is the period from 1900 to 1936, which is Chesterton's death. And those two figures were the giants of the revival during that period. And this refers to G.K. Chesterton and Hilaire Belloc. Go.
Welcome to Faith and Culture, a production of the Augustine Institute. Every week, we explore the glory of the Catholic faith and the beauty of Catholic culture. And now, here's the host of Faith and Culture, Joseph Pierce.
Hello, I'm Joseph Pierce, and welcome to another Faith and Culture podcast with the Augustine Institute. And today I'm going to continue the series of lectures I've been giving on the Catholic literary revival. Just to recap, in the first lecture we looked at what I call the gestation period, the 47-year period, where, if you like, the embryonic Catholic literary revival was in the womb. And we talked about the romantic reaction against the Enlightenment and the poetry of Coleridge and Wordsworth. And then we talked about the various manifestations of neo-medievalism, specifically the Pre-Raphaelite Brotherhood in art, the Gothic Revival in architecture, and the Oxford Movement in, shall we say, ecclesiology and liturgy within the Anglican Church. The leader of that movement was Blessed John Henry Newman. And when Newman was received into the church in 1845, his reception to the church was the definitive birth, shall we say, of the Catholic literary revival and Catholic cultural revival. So the first one was, the first lecture took us from 1798 with the publication of Lyrical Ballads by Wordsworth and Coleridge through to the conversion of Newman in 1845. And then the second lecture was what I call the Newman period, and that's actually the period of Newman's Catholic life, if you like, from his reception of the church in 1845 till his death in 1890. And that 45-year period, the Newman period, Newman, of course, was the giant figure in that period, but there were other significant Catholic literary figures during that time, specifically two converts, most notably Gerard Manley Hopkins, who went on to become a Jesuit priest, as well as being arguably the finest poet of the Victorian era, and Coventry Patmore, another convert poet, a fine poet, largely overlooked these days, sadly and unjustly, a relatively major influence upon C.S. Lewis, amongst others. So that takes us through to 1890, the death of Newman, the death at the end of the Newman period. And then we have what I call the decadent interlude, the 1890s, or the fin de siècle, the end of the century, or the naughty 90s, as it's sometimes called, the age of the English decadence. And we talked about the fact that there is paradoxically a decadent path to Christ. These Mary Magdalene figures or prodigal son figures who deserted the Father, deserted Holy Mother Church, wandered off in all sorts of wicked ways, but only to come back to the foot of Holy Mother Church as converts or reverts to the faith. This began in France, the French decadence, with figures such as Charles Baudelaire, Paul Verlaine, and Joris Cole Huysmans, and then crossed the English Channel to England under the patronage, if you like, of the father of the English decadence, Oscar Wilde, and other decadent poets such as Lionel Johnson, Ernest Dowson, and John Gray, who went on to become a priest, Lord Alfred Douglas, and then the decadent artist Aubrey Beardsley. What all of these writers and artists of the decadent movement in France and England have in common is their conversion to the Catholic Church or their reversion to it. Again, prodigal sons returning after a life of, shall we say, debauchery. And their works reflect that, the fact that a life of debauchery is a life of addiction to sin, which is unsatisfying, ungratifying in any meaningful or deep sense, and true satisfaction can only be found in acceptance and embrace of the Catholic faith. So that in the summary was the first three lectures, and that brings us now to the fourth. And the fourth lecture takes us into the age of what I call the Chester Belloc period in the Catholic literary revival. And this refers to G.K. Chesterton and Hilaire Belloc. And the phrase, the Chester Belloc, was coined by George Bernard Shaw in a lampoon, a satire upon the two writers, G.K. Chesterton and Hilaire Belloc. Shaw was basically saying that these two writers were seen so synonymously, largely in respect to their Catholic faith and their Catholic outlook on life, on politics, on economics, that he saw them as two halves of an amusing pantomime elephant, to use his phrase. So the phrase Chester Belloc refers to those two giant figures of the first third of the 20th century in the Catholic literary revival, Hilaire Belloc and G.K. Chesterton. So this lecture will focus upon those two giants and their influence. So the period ranges from 1900 to 1936, and so 1900 is the death of Oscar Wilde, so the end of the decadent interlude. But it's also the year in which G.K. Chesterton is first published, and the year in which, if you like, G.K. Chesterton arrives on the scene. Belloc was a newcomer also, but his first work was published, first poetry was published in 1896, a few years earlier. So the period of the Chester Belloc is the period from 1900 to 1936, which is Chesterton's death. And those two figures were the giants of the revival during that period. So a few facts about them. We'll talk about their friendship, but let's talk about who they are as individuals first. First of all, Hilaire Belloc. Hilaire Belloc was born in a village not far from Paris in France in 1870. His father was French, his mother was English. And he was born just as the Franco-Prussian War began in 1870. And the Belloc family had to leave their family home as refugees. And Belloc, as a baby, caught the last train with his parents to Dover and then across the Channel to England. And they got out on the last train from Paris. Had they not done so, Belloc almost certainly would not have survived, because just about every child under 12 months of old died of malnutrition and disease as a consequence of the siege of Paris, which followed. So Belloc, as a baby, escaped by the skin of his teeth, if you like, from the advancing Prussian army. So in England, then he was educated at the Birmingham Oratory School, which had been established by John Henry Newman. A later student at the same school would be a certain J.R.R. Tolkien. Belloc, as we said, was first published in 1896, having spent some time in the French army doing his national service. Always considered himself to be a Frenchman and not an Englishman, although he also very much considered himself to be a man of Sussex, which is a county in the south of England. So Anglo-French hybrid, if you like. So he published poetry, novels, biographies, works of history, works of economics, works of Catholic apologetics. So most notable of these, as a poet, he is marvelous, and I would recommend many of his poems, but some of those which spring to mind: Tarantella, Hanukkah Mill, Twelfth Night, Lines to a Don. He also wrote novels, which I, for the most part, do not think are as good as his poetry, and many works of nonfiction. He's deserves to be remembered as someone who restored a proper understanding of English history from the time of the so-called Reformation until shall we say 1700, that period in the wake of the Reformation. He wrote many books about Reformation figures, and indeed two books, one called How the Reformation Happened and another Characters of the Reformation, where he sought to show that English history had been distorted by basically Protestant propaganda. So he gives a balanced Catholic perspective of what happened during English history. He also wrote about French history, biographies of Napoleon and Richelieu and Danton, and about he was also a military historian, and also an economic historian. So his book, The Servile State, looked at the economic history of England, showing how England was probably evolving towards a Catholic, what the Catholic Church teaches is a healthy economy and politics and Catholic social teaching, a distributist economy, but that this was basically despoiled by the plutocracy that arose in the wake of the English Reformation, with the stealing of the common land, of the proletarianizing of the people, the uprooting of the people, and the establishment of a ruling plutocracy. So I could say more on Belloc, but that may be due for the moment. Although I would say his finest works of literature are his book, The Path to Rome, which tells in a somewhat lyrical fashion of his walking to Rome from France in the beginning of the 20th century, and his book, The Four Men, which recounts a walk across the county of Sussex from east to west a few years after the path to Rome. Belloc was also a major influence on G.K. Chesterton. The two men met at an anti-war meeting, and the war to which they were opposing was the Boer War, the South Africa War, the British Army's involvement in a war against the Afrikaner people of South Africa. Belloc and Chesterton were both against that war, believing that the Britain was basically the bully boy for big mining interests and big corporations against the agrarian culture of the Afrikaner farmers. So that's how they met. And Belloc was an older man, was already married. Chesterton would be married soon afterwards. Belloc had children. He'd served in the army. He'd tramped across the United States. So he's much more worldly wise, should we say, and experienced, much more well-versed in history. And so in all of these areas, Belloc was an influence upon Chesterton. He was also a cradle Catholic and a very passionate Catholic at a time when Chesterton was sort of emerging from a sort of agnosticism, a sort of optimistic agnosticism into Anglican Christianity. And Belloc also exerted, should we say, an influence on Chesterton in showing Chesterton a Catholic perspective of things. So in the early years, Belloc was in some ways a mentor even of G.K. Chesterton. But Chesterton emerged in many ways as the greater writer in many respects, and certainly moves out of Belloc's shadow. And one of the tragedies, I think, today is that now Belloc is in Chesterton's shadow, because Belloc is a great writer in his own right, a great figure in his own right, and deserves to be seen in his own right, if you like, as equals, equal halves of that Chester Belloc, and not as someone who merely walks in Chesterton's shadow. But as for Chesterton, he became known first of all as an essayist. He was a very popular columnist in daily newspapers, but wrote novels. And most of his novels were written relatively early in his career. Most notably of his novels, one would mention The Man Who Was Thursday and The Ball and the Cross, both of which could be called Catholic metaphysical thrillers, for want of a better description. Other novels include The Napoleon of Notting Hill and Man Alive and The Flying Inn. He also wrote poetry, much of which is not great, some of which is extremely great. Of the latter, one would think, in terms of the longer poems, his long epic poem, The Ballad of the White Horse, which tells the story of the Christian King Alfred the Great's resistance to the invasion of England by the pagan Danes, the pagan Vikings. Some wonderful passages in that, amongst my favourite, the lines that King Alfred says, "The high tide, King Alfred cried, the high tide and the turn." And this referred to the moment at the Battle of Ethandune, where the Vikings got as far as they were going to in their invasion of England, and they were turned back. There's also some wonderful images of the Blessed Virgin in that poem. The other indubitably great Chesterton poem is Lepanto, which tells of the great victory of the Christian fleet against a Muslim fleet in the Mediterranean in 1571, which arguably saved Europe from falling under Muslim domination. That's a great poem by Chesterton, which was actually declaimed in the trenches of World War One. So popular was it at the time. Of shorter poems of Chesterton that we should mention, The Donkey, The Skeleton, The Fish, all these short poems that give a metaphysical Christian spin on looking at God's creatures. And The Strange Music is arguably my favourite, and The Crystal, two poems that are lesser known. He also, of course, wrote many works of non-fiction from a Catholic perspective. In terms of apologetics, he's probably best known for his book Orthodoxy and his book The Everlasting Man. But he also wrote biographical studies of St. Francis of Assisi and St. Thomas Aquinas. Like Belloc, he wrote works on political economy, giving the Catholic social teaching perspective on the crisis in economics and politics in the modern world. So this is at least touching upon the legacy of these two great writers. But the other thing we need to remember about them is their influence upon others. So when I was researching my book, Literary Converts, it became very clear to me that Chesterton in particular was a huge influence upon the conversion of many others. So, for instance, converts to the faith that were influenced at least in part by Chesterton would include Robert Hugh Benson. Robert Hugh Benson was the son of the Archbishop of Canterbury, the highest office in the Anglican Church. He was an Anglican priest, but then converted to Catholicism and became a Catholic priest. Died young, died in 1914. So, but between the period of 1903 and 1914, so a period of just over 10 years, published many best-selling novels, best known of which perhaps Come Rack, Come Rope, which is an historical novel set in Elizabethan England. And the two heroes are a young man who has a calling to the priesthood and a young lady who is just a true heroine as a defender of the Catholic faith in very anti-Catholic times, where to be a priest and indeed to be a Catholic layperson who shields or shelters a priest was punishable by death. Probably the other well-known novel by Benson, which we should mention, is Lord of the World, which is a futuristic dystopian novel, similar in genre, shall we say, to Aldous Huxley's Brave New World or George Orwell's 1984. But in many ways, more prophetic than both of those books, because it tells of the rise of a secular ruler who preaches peace, but is in reality at war with Christ and his church, and is in fact a manifestation of the Antichrist. So a good, if you like, cautionary tale of a dystopian future of secular fundamentalism, a future which some of us might even begin to believe is coming true before our very eyes. He wrote other great novels. Another favourite of mine is Richard Raynor's Solitary, about a hermit monk living in 15th century England. So Robert Hugh Benson, also a great poet, a great preacher, another convert to the faith under the influence of G.K. Chesterton during this period. This is the period of the Edwardian period, so the first years of the 20th century up to World War One. Ronald Knox, just after the World War One had started, was received into the church. Ronald Knox wrote some great detective fiction. This, as of course, did Chesterton. Did not mention Chesterton's Father Brown stories, A Sin of Omission, which I've now rectified. But Knox wrote detective stories. He wrote satires. He was a very learned man. He translated the Bible into what he hoped would be timeless English. Wrote some books on the Mass. Again, a major figure, not as well known now as he should be. Maurice Baring, another character, another writer from that period, is not as well known, who between the two world wars wrote several best-selling novels, largely forgotten, very influential during his time, deserves to be rediscovered. He was received into the church in 1908 under the influence of G.K. Chesterton, amongst others. wrote a wonderful poem to inspired by and to honor his reception into the church. Wrote some wonderful poetry, period, actually, and also of his novels, the most accessible perhaps is Robert Peckham. And Robert Peckham, like Come Rack, Come Rope, is a historical novel set during the period of English history when the Catholic Church was being persecuted. But also other novels, C, just the letter C, is probably considered to be his classic. Cat's Cradle, The Lonely Lady of Dulwich, all these wonderful novels by Maurice Baring. So these are some of the great figures from this period of the Chester Belloc. And that goes on to 1936. But there are other movements within that, what I sometimes call the Wasteland Generation, that generation that was led or epitomized by the poetry of T.S. Eliot and the novels of Evelyn Waugh. And this will be the topic of our fifth lecture in this series on the Catholic Literary Revival. Please do join me for that lecture. This has been Joseph Pierce, your host, for another Faith and Culture podcast of the Augustine Institute. Thank you for joining me. Goodbye and God bless.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Faith and Culture with Joseph Pierce. Faith and Culture is a production of the Augustine Institute. For more information, please visit us at faithandculture.com.